Sorry to be late.
All right. And I will be facilitating the meeting until we elect some new co-chairs, which will hopefully be happening today. All right. So starting with, unless you want to go ahead, Derek. Was that you volunteering?
No, sorry.
All right. So we'll go ahead and get started with introductions. Let's start with Lee.
Hi, Lee Jewell, council member.
Laura.
Laura Thomas, council member.
Thomas.
Thomas Noble, they them, government co-chair.
All right, TJ.
TJ Lee Miyake, council member, he him.
Okay. Derek.
Derek Mapp, he them, council member.
All right. Then we have Steven Spano.
Even Spano, the HCAP staff attorney, he, him, or they, them.
All right, and then Beth Neary.
Beth Neary, HIV Health Services.
All right, and then Kara, Council Staff.
Pat, Council Staff.
Mark Moore, Council Staff.
Perfect. I will go ahead and share our agenda for today so we can go ahead and review that as well. All right, so we do have a change to our previously approved agenda, which is just those co-chair elections that we have now included. For today. And so we have our normal things on the agenda for today. We have the reviewing and approving of the agenda and minutes. And then Stephen will review the HCAP report. Then we'll move on to those co-chair elections, followed by any needs assessment slash COLA updates, which will take us to the end of the meeting. How does this look to folks? Good. All right. Moving on then. We have our minutes from November, not last month, but November, since we did not meet in December. So I'll go ahead and take a minute to scroll past these. All right, do these look good to everyone? Hearing no no's, then I will go ahead and stop sharing. And then let me look at the agenda really quick. Any announcements for today?
I
None.
don't have any announcements, but I'm just curious, is anyone else trying going to the congressional debate over at UC Law this evening?
I was going to try to go, and I think I'm going to just do the live stream instead.
Okay. Yeah, I got an in-person ticket, and about an hour ago they changed me to a virtual only. So
I haven't checked. Maybe I don't have any choice.
All right, any public comments? None. All right.
you
Then
know
we
what,
can,
Garrett? Sorry,
yeah.
just it's like not an announcement, or it's not, I don't know what it is, but just with regards to Ward 86 and what they've been through in the last chunk of time, just to kind of acknowledge that. And it's definitely impacted a lot of people that I work with closely, and I'm sure it's impacted a lot of people in this particular space. So I just wanted to give voice to that, and that's all. So thank you.
Yeah, and I believe Franco is still on leave, but I don't have much intel on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if he also requests a leave from the Planning Council.
Thanks, Laura.
If
Appreciate
not,
that.
Helen and Jan
I'm
also work there and may also end up needing leaves.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Thanks.
Katina, thank you.
And Jan.
There seem to be a number of folks that I've been hearing about now that we may lose as a result of the event itself, but the aftermath and how it's been treated. which is really problematic to me, and I don't know how to respond to it. I know a lot of my clients that go to Ward 86 are beginning to be concerned about exactly like these sort of leaves of absences and their own sense of safety in regards to this. They're hearing some of the responses that seems to be dribbling out to the community in terms of how it might affect how service is delivered to them. But nothing seems coherent just yet.
Thanks, Derek.
So I'm wondering if this is something that maybe the planning council should talk about more. What do you guys think?
I would agree with that. In terms of response, do you mean?
I guess I question what the conversation would be about.
Well, it sounds like client services are being impacted as a result of this. And I don't know what I'm asking really, but it seems like if services are being impacted in terms of personnel not being available, what does that mean for our HIV clients?
I mean, that's a really good question, and I've sort of struggled with this in terms of like at Happn, we've been talking about is Happn a place for to have these conversations? And I have sort of mixed feelings about it. One, like, either Happn or the Planning Council is sort of not a place for people to kind of process their trauma and so on. And that needs a like container and a, professionally trained people that is not our space. And I also recognize that this has been enormously traumatic in many different ways across the entire HIV community. And there hasn't been a lot of sort of spaces for people to process and talk about it. And I'm aware that like leadership at San Francisco General and DPH may have very different takes on what could have been done, what was done, what needs to be done than the frontline staff have, and that the patients, like people who access services there have. So, but Stephen is raising his hand, and perhaps Stephen is good. But I do think that like this, the sort of impact on client services is a hook for the Planning Council to be involved in this around how is this affecting client services at our sort of, premier Ryan White funded clinic, and what's going to happen next. So, but Stephen, you're on mute.
I'm reluctant to jump in. I can also wait until the floor is mine, but I guess I wanted to say a couple of things. First of all, I feel deeply. I worked closely with Alberto, and he was a strong advocate, and I miss him. I'm seeing it impact the community in general at outreaches. I go and I'm seeing like memorials. So there's, there are some little spaces. As for the planning council part of it, one reminder, we don't typically talk about individual service providers at the planning council level. So that is one thing. But I did want to extend, and I do think that it falls right within my purview. If it does, if there is an access issue, if there is a challenge in obtaining services, those are things that are appropriate referrals to the HCAP program. And it's there where I can kind of, collect the stories that were being told and hopefully address it at that level, in the same way we deal with other access issues. I'm hearing I've already, experienced some challenges with services. That's not unexpected. It's not unusual, and it's, I think, excusable. And I'm finding most of the clients have that as well. But I just, anyway, wanted to, I may have jump the gun on that, but
I think I like what what we're saying, but I think in my head, I keep on thinking in terms of where the council could be really helpful is how we sort of, for lack of a better term, quote unquote, lobby around what would be the best practices and approaches in the wake of what has happened as people bandy about and perhaps even not do too much more than what they're already doing, but bandy about ideas. And to come from a point of client services and client services perspective that keeps frontline staff and clients safe, or at least, to keep them truly safe as opposed to a perception of safety, which I think for a long time folks have been living with until this event occurred. So that is a point of discussion to explore. Like what how we can discover what clients need in terms of feeling safe. Maybe actually this sounds, I wonder if we would be interested in literally doing a, I don't know if this is still too much and too early, but I don't think it is. Like maybe we should be doing a focus group on the issue of access to service and safety and people's perception of it and what the community feels could be best practices and keeping people safe even as the hospital administrators and the sheriff's office is also putting together and discussing a plan of action. It can be another voice in the mix, as it were. I don't know if we, I don't know. I mean, I kind of think that that's a potential area to explore.
So where I'm coming from is we almost every focus group and community engagement that Kira and Stephen have, universally clients talk about how challenging it is to access services. And that's for a variety of reasons. And we collect this data, but have never really done much about it. And I think it's about time that we have a discussion formally about it and figure out where we want to go with this in terms of some real world solutions that us and the Department of Public Health can come up with to affect change so clients can access services in a way that meets the complaints that they're lodging.
Beth, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. Two things. The main thing is I would be pretty careful about talking about this subject when Helen and Jan and Frank are in the room. So maybe like full council when they're more likely to be there or if they're not on leave. Just try to be sensitive of whether or not they may want to leave the room during this part of the discussion or if they look uncomfortable. And also just in terms of safety, like the department is doing quite a lot of changes. So patients are likely to have a lot of feelings over the next few months, both positive and negative. So I think it's going to ebb and flow because there's obviously a pendulum and it's swinging now to, towards security and metal detectors and things like that. So just to note, it will change a little bit over time as well.
Yeah, I mean, I go to Open Hand and they're already wanding people as they enter the front door. So I hear you. And you're right, the pendulum is swinging to the other end for safety. And that's something that I think is appropriate, especially given what's happened. And I think it bears reiterating why this is happening and why it's important for client safety and staff safety.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like one of the perspectives that's really been missing in these conversations is the perspective of people who are accessing services at Ward 86 and at these other places. And I've certainly heard even from the providers about ways in which these new security measures have created barriers to access. So, for example, many of our unhoused program participants, clients, patients, like may have weapons on them for self-defense. And that is now seen not as something that people are doing for their own protection, but as potentially a threat. And so, you know, I worry that in an effort to keep our frontline staffers safe, we're creating new barriers to services for people who already face the most barriers to access. And, you know, if people aren't getting their methadone because they have too many things on them that won't go through a metal detector, or, you know, like it's just, I also worry that this ends up being sort of security theater of the, you know, airport kind, right? Like in this particular instance, it was an individual who was very known and had been flagged and had been identified as a threat and was still able to enter the building, right? That doesn't necessarily mean that every single person walking into 730 Polk Street should be viewed as a threat, right? Like, you know, where do those lines go? And you know, like I feel like I've been hearing, unfortunately, from the Sheriff's Department, from, you know, UCSF like leadership and from the union, which at least has been able to speak, and from some of the staff. But, you know, is there a role for the Planning Council as a place for patients or people who access services to share perspectives on this, right? We want all of our patients to feel as safe as possible. But in an effort to make them safe, are we actually making them feel less safe? Yeah. Right. I think Thomas and then Stephen.
Thanks, Laura. So I just part of I want to this meeting is recorded, so I do feel a little bit awkward just with regards to the process component of it and that energy. I want to call back Mark's question of like intent or purpose with regards to taking us on and our charge. So I've heard a lot of different things, and so I just whatever there are multiple ways we could go with it, and so I just wanted to put that out there. And it is complex. I mean, I think if kind of what Laura's saying, we could trigger something also too, where some services I don't think you can ever provide that are would, you know, if you're out doing street outreach at, you know, certain time of the day with somebody else, it's there's not a wanding opportunity, for lack of a better word. So there is a balance with regards to what security looks like in those situations. So I think people there's a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction happening at the moment. So I just wanted to kind of throw that process, those process points into it. And Beth, I appreciate what you said too with regards to individuals that are even more involved, the sensitivity with that. So I'm a little bit stuck. So I'll just say that personally with regards to which direction to go. So I will follow your all's lead from a personal level, pretty clear as a DPH employee what my role is. Thanks.
So I know there are some other people on the council that might also be similarly affected. So I wanted to make, yeah, just wanted to second what Beth was saying. I, and then again, you know, to tack on to what Thomas was saying, I think that what I'm recalling is I think the makeup of this committee is relatively similar over the last few years. There was a case that I reported on quite a while ago where the client was had a flag on their record. They were It was a violent patient warning that they had, and they were treated very differently when they went to an appointment at, you know, one of the, at their clinic. And through our advocacy and after a couple of meetings with staffers, we were able to garner at least some promise from the service provider that they would institute, regular review of those of their policies regarding the violent patient warnings, and also, make sure that they would, go through this review and make sure that they were actually being flagged as violent patients, and if not, then remove the flags, so that it was trying to serve the purpose that it was intended to serve, rather than just, kind of not doing that. So I'm reminded of that, because I'm thinking it's again, want to stress, I think these cases, if they come to my office, we can kind of appropriately direct it to the planning council using the methods that we've already established. I also just want to say the planning council does have the ability to draft guidances and best practices. Those are like within the purview of the planning council. So they might be things that can be considered down the road. And it might make sense to talk about that in the context, I don't know, the next time it will happen, but the next time we talk about, or the next time the, I forget what they're called. The each service
Standards
provision.
of care?
What's up?
Standards of care?
Yeah, the standard. Every next time we discuss the standards of care, that could be a part of the discussion too.
Mark, when do we have that annual discussion next?
We can have standards of care reviews, I guess, whenever we see fit. But we did just do one recently through our subcontractor, our regular subcontractor, Robert Worry. So they're not due, I guess, for a revisit for quite a while. But that doesn't mean that we can't revisit. As Stephen has outlined, it is within our jurisdiction. It's a shared area of supervision with DPH. I guess, I mean, I want to put this as delicately as I can. I don't feel there should be a reaction to react. I would like us to look at this situation and understand that it's being worked on and perhaps be the recipient of information about what is happening right now. If there are lacks, particularly in consumer voices, I do think that's something that we can bring in for sure. So I would think the first step would actually just be a report back from people who actually do have specific information about what's happening, knowing that we might be able to get the whole picture. If things are in process, if there's people, if like say like this person is meeting with City Clinic and this person is meeting with Sheriff's Department, this person is meeting with Ward 86, like this isn't just a particular, this situation just doesn't impact this particular waiting room, right? It impacts potentially across like multiple different areas because the idea of safety is necessary in all sort of drop-in settings. So I would just hesitate in some ways like to feel like we need to do something when something is currently truly being done and instead be a place that like if there's a gap, we can try to fill that. As Laura has mentioned, as other people have mentioned, there might be a gap when it comes to like how are consumers experiencing this? So maybe that's something that we can talk about. But I would think the planning council, even though it does hold purview, a shared purview again with DPH over things like standards, like there shouldn't be there shouldn't be chaos. There shouldn't be like multiple things happening at once, in particular when there are people who are definitely taking this seriously because activity is happening now. I feel like I've had what, maybe a half dozen conversations just this week with people about this, like from Bill Bloom to consumers who were literally in the waiting room when it happened. So I think there's so much being processed right now that I don't want us to be a sort of a clearinghouse of reactions with them.
I really agree with that, Mark. And It's sort of like you, like I feel like since this happened, almost every meeting that I've been having, this topic has come up in one way or another. I think this is something that is going to change how HIV services are provided in San Francisco from here on forward, you know, for better, for worse. And I feel like our purview as the Planning Council is to try to make sure that it is changing things for better and not for worse, right? That, that patient access is not being unduly hampered out, that the reaction to this incident is not creating unnecessary barriers for folks, right? And I do feel like, aside from a few people in my sort of personal network, I've not heard the voices by and large. It's like some of the news articles had interviewed some of the people who were in the waiting room, but otherwise, sort of people who are trying to, who are now dealing with metal detectors in places that where it never had metal detectors before. Like, if there is a way for us as a planning council to ensure that those voices are part of the conversation and that at least the planning council goes into this with a focus on ensuring that clients still have access to services. And this is where I feel like, Stephen's perspective and Stephen's experiences can potentially be really helpful here. How do we do this? So, and I'm hearing you, Mark, like it in, and I don't know who in DPH has been tasked with, I know, I've read the news articles that Dan Tsai says they've, engaged some external consultant to do an assessment. But like at what point would it make sense for the planning council to either be consulted in that process or receive a report from that process or be able to raise concerns that client voices aren't being heard in this process? I guess like for Beth and Thomas, where is this actually happening within DPH?
Yeah, Thomas, you want me to go first or you want to go first?
Go for it if you have a.
Okay. So, I mean, both DPH and UCSF have stood up incident command structure for this. So there's a lot going on in terms of safety planning, and they're having about once a week at this point safety briefings with DPH staff. As part of that, they're running multiple investigations, the one outside, and then there's an internal one. Some of that will take a fair amount of time because a lot of people are on leave because it's just the level of trauma was quite significant. So they're going to wait until they have better information while collecting what they can in the interim. I guess procedurally with the Planning Council, the easiest place to slot it in would be to have either Bill or Thomas put it in the director's reports from the two sections. So it's like officially there in writing and, take the questions that they can take for the answers that they have. Bill and Thomas are pretty knowledgeable about the general goings on at the department and, Bill and possibly Thomas, Bill's volunteered a little to go there. I don't think any of us will. To the point about the provider specific that Stephen made, like we won't talk a lot about the specific provider in the instance just because the Planning Council, separation of church and
I mean,
state.
I just want to say, like, we can't talk about providers in terms of directing dollars to them. I think it's like I mean, we all know this happened at Ward 86. I think it would be disingenuous to pretend like it happened at some mysterious anonymous program like that. We're not talking about funding a specific provider or funding UCSF or funding DPH. We're talking about a very concrete incident. So I don't want us to like trip over our own feet and start sounding sort of silly about like we can't actually say what this provider is, you know?
Yeah, I don't think we won't necessarily say what the provider is, but there is going to be some of that tripping over our own feet and being silent in weird places because we don't know quite where the line is and some of it's still unfolding. So I just think realistically, whoever gives the report back, there's going to be a level of illumination and a level of frustration, just to kind of put it out there, like that there's the information that we're given that we can share, And then there's a lot of additional work being done that is still not fully cooked. And, we never share not fully cooked information, just for, general carefulness. So I don't know. My first idea is that you probably get good information from the people who are already the direct lead contact from the department who know the interests of the planning council. We could, of course, invite somebody from the incident command structure or from the other group who would have more information but less familiarity with the planning council. So that's kind of the balance. I don't know, Thomas may have a different way of approaching it.
No, I no. I see some hands. So thank you, Beth, for stepping into the space.
Really quickly, I do just want to note the time. I don't want to go too over. It is about to be 3:40, and we still have a couple of things to get to. I just want to make sure people are aware. I see Lee and Mark, so go ahead.
So I get why this conversation is steering towards security, and I just want to reiterate, we have Kira has heard over and over again, Stephen has heard over and over again that access to care is challenging for clients, and I think it's about time that the Planning Council have a discussion about access to care, and part of it can be, the security feature. I just don't want it to get totally enveloped in that. And I understand why that's happening because it's so immediate and it's so full of emotion right now, rightly so. But I think we as a planning council have a responsibility to respond to the clients that over and over and over again talk about how their access to care is challenged. And I would like us to take some time to do that. And I hear Mark. And I think it's important that we continue this conversation. We collect information as needed and eventually put it on the calendar. Thank you.
I think TJ was before me.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate everybody's thoughtfulness in this whole process. And I, Laura, you and I were talking at exec at Happen about it, and my feelings have kind of evolved a little bit in, since then, where I don't think that Happen or the Planning Council should be doing a listening session for the community. Why isn't DPH and UCSF putting together a town hall so staff and staff, anybody who has concerns about that, that gets services at Ward 86 can come and talk about it. It's really in my mind, after listening to so many people in different meetings talk about this, it's really the responsibility to do that. And so that I feel like we should sit back, collect the stories that we're, find out how many clients are really having a hard time getting into services, and before we, before we do something that just mixes up whatever the their process is going to be. Because I do appreciate, we have purview, but we don't have control. They're the ones that have control.
Okay, so let's close this conversation out with some next steps so that we can move forward with our agenda, knowing that this is not going to be the last time that we reach this topic. I'm going to ask that Beth, and possibly Thomas, not sure who is appropriate, or maybe both are appropriate, make sure to include this on their reports, any kind of information that they are willing and able, that certainly is key to share. They should share during their update period. I am inclined, actually, after hearing folks on putting on the agenda, even if it's a short, like it's sort of an open agenda item. I am concerned about the potential of consumer voices being lost. I also am quite aware of the fact that we do have shared purview over best practices. Again, I don't want us to react just to react. I don't want to have a chaotic discussion. The Planning Council, I hate to put it this way, is not a support group. These are things that are important for us to remember. But I also feel like I don't want things to get buried in process. And so like if there are solid points being made now, I don't want those to get lost in the mix. What I'm going to do next, I have this in my mind, but what I'm going to do next is of course consult with the co-chairs. I'll be having a meeting with them. I think this coming Monday, about like how are we going to address this? And we'll see what they have to say. Bill Bloom's involved in this co-chair meeting as well. I think everyone can be there except Zachary, possibly, who's on a leave of absence. But that's still Irma, Thomas, Richard, Bill, and me. I'll have my suggestions, which of course is like right
Yeah.
now I'm asking that Bill and Thomas certainly be prepared. Not Bill. Yeah, Bill via Beth, be prepared to hopefully do some report back. But I want to consult with folks before I put on what I feel like might need to occur, which is a sort of an open agenda item for about 10 minutes, maybe, about these concerns. I just don't want the concerns around number one, consumer voices, and number two, best practices to get lost. And sometimes things do get lost. Like I'm sort of trying to balance, like, don't react just to react with things also shouldn't get lost. And like, there should be the appropriate voices who are part of this mix. And sometimes that does get lost. I see that wherever I've worked, sometimes the voices of the people actually most impacted, like i.e. consumers, does get lost. So anyway, to be discussed, but I just want to
Yeah.
assure everyone that this is an important topic and that it will not just get sort of like disappeared into the shelf.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I think that's right. And I think in particular in any updates to the Planning Council from DPH, like, a focus on how and if and how consumer voices are being incorporated into the process, I think would be really helpful for the council to hear.
Exactly. Before we move on, it looks like Thomas has an
Yeah,
additional.
no, I just have to, I'm late for a medical appointment, so I just didn't want to miss that conversation, and I appreciate everyone taking the space. And I think the other piece I just don't want to get lost is just kind of just the care for our fellow council members within the mix of this conversation. So I appreciate the focusing of
Absolutely.
the energy. All right, y'all, be well, and I'll see you in the next meeting space.
All right. So moving on to Stephen's HCAP report.
Thank you.
Oh, in case we lose people though, do we want to do the co-chair election before Stephen, in case people try to sneak out?
Stephen, are you fine with that?
However you guys want to do it, that's totally
Right.
fine. I don't have a whole lot, so it's up to you all.
Okay, perfect. Let's go ahead and do that co-chair election then. Our co-chairs from last year were Franco and Richard. Unfortunately, neither are here today. But we do have a couple of folks if anyone wants to nominate or self-nominate.
So,
So as far as the members here, I see Laura, Lee, Derek, and TJ, all 4 members of this committee. Okay,
yes.
great.
So, have either of them indicated a willingness to continue, Kira?
No, we have not talked to them about continuing as co-chairs. So that is TBD from their end.
And I will say this, being conscious that the recording is on, and that I definitely love and admire my friends and colleagues, Franco and Richard, but there has been challenges with committee co-chair leadership here with this past year. And so that might be because of their schedule. So Franco in particular has a very impacted schedule. And other people have different challenges. And so I'm not sure, and I think I feel like where Lee's pointing his arrow, I don't know if we want to stick with the same co-chair.
Mark, do you really quickly want to give a spiel about what exactly a co-chair's
Yes, I
job
would.
entails?
I'm definitely here trying to like be a hype man for like how incredibly easy and awesome it is to be a committee co-chair. Literally, all you have to do is receive a very pleasant email from Kira and say, I approve of this agenda, or I'd like to add this agenda. And then between the two co-chairs, only one of you has to appear at the steering committee meeting to give a brief overview of what occurred. This is such an easy and fun job. There's 4 people here. I think they're all just wildly talented. And in fact, some of them have been
Mark,
committee
you're
co-chairs
overselling it
before.
at this point. So. I'll take
I
you
would
out to lunch.
I am not interested in being a co-chair
Ah!
of this committee and will take myself out of the competition.
And I will take myself
Rude.
out too, unfortunately.
Wow, TJ. Copycat. That leaves a Derek and a Lee. Are you two interested? I mean, I think I see some skills here. Certainly no
Well,
shyness.
I've done it before,
You sure have.
and
You've been a co-chair of the council. I
I
know.
would like to nominate Lee for
Shut
co-chair.
Oh, okay.
up.
Is there a second to that nomination?
What?
What I would like to, what I'm concerned about are the members of the committee that are not here, and I'd like to hear from them if there's any.
Lee, come on.
Yes.
Okay, so you accept clearly. All right. So we have one person. Anyone else want to nominate a person named Derek Mapp, including Derek Mapp? I don't know. Sorry, shooting for the stars here.
Are you interested, Derek?
I am not at this in this
Okay.
round.
Well, let's just throw this back to TJ. TJ, what's stopping you from stepping up to the plate to be like the leader that you know you are?
Unfortunately, I have commitments at the HIV Advocacy Network and other things and happen and other things going on that I don't feel like I could reasonably do it. So I think we should broaden it up
Who
and
else
maybe
is
ask
on this
Stephen if he
committee?
wants to do it.
We can have community co-chairs, honestly, I mean, that has been allowed. They can't vote. but that has happened in the very distant past, honestly. But it is unusual. Who else is missing now besides Richard from this meeting?
We have Franco and Thomas.
And Thomas is already okay.
Do we maybe want to just take a vote on Lee and then
Oh,
so
we will.
that
Don't you worry. We will
don't
definitely
worry,
be
don't worry,
taking
no,
a
but
vote.
and part two is like leave one spot open so that we can try to get Thomas and Franco and Richard at next month's meeting and then
I
do
mean,
the
I
second
just want to
chair.
point out of those three names, one is already a co-chair of the entire council. The other two are literally the two people I just mentioned who have had challenges around being chair. So I guess I'm really just asking of the three of you left here, one of you to potentially step up.
Can I step up?
Kat?
I'm going to rechange my. I would love to work with Lee on the community
Oh.
engagement subcommittee because Lee is really great, actually.
Wow, all it took was a tone of voice change for me. Okay, that's great.
I
I should
second
use
that
that tone
nomination of
of
Derek.
voice more often.
Yeah.
Okay, so I do want to be clear though. Like, do you think between the two of you, one of you would be able to attend the third Thursday steering committee meeting at 3 o'clock?
We can alternate, right?
You can alternate? Yeah, absolutely. And if I mean, we don't want this to be an ongoing thing, but if occasionally neither of you can go, you can certainly deputize Kira to do the report back as well, you know. But okay. Well, if you don't mind me jumping in here to facilitate this part, any opposed to Lee Jewell and Derek Mapp being the new committee co-chairs? Because I just want to get this hat. No? Okay, congratulations to the two of you.
All right.
Thanks, team.
Thank
Thank you, Derek and
you.
Lee.
All right. So now moving on to Stephen's HCAP report.
I need to add nominee to my resume really quick. Can you guys just hang on?
Update
So I won't take up too much of y'all's time. There's not a whole lot to report. This is unusual. It's a combined report for November and December because we discussed not meeting on last month. And kind of in cleaning up the cases from the year, whittled it down to what's kind of current we open. And I have some new stuff that's I haven't yet input. Remember, these reports are a snapshot in time. And things that don't appear in the narrative are referrals. So referrals would be found in these in this graph that is currently shown. But as usual, I'll just highlight one or two cases that I think are worth talking about and then be available for questions. So the first one I wanted to bring up was the first one at 2025-86. This is a new case that came in. I've had difficulty kind of following up. So I'm not quite sure what's going on, but basically what I was told is the client was hospitalized at Kaiser, which is not an HIV service provider funded by DPH. The client's sister contacted me to try and find out more about what their the brother's options were for long-term care. He was going to need some level of rehabilitation, and they were looking at facilities, and one of the facilities is the SNF located here in the city. But when I threw that referral out there and offered to support, I was told by the case manager at Kaiser that their referrals have not been getting accepted, or that they were flat out told. So I've tried to get the client, to follow up with me so that I could use, conduct an intake and try to present that to to this group and to DPH, and hopefully advocate with the provider. But I think the client has been relocated, and it seems like other things are more important right now. So I don't have an actual case or like the true facts in this instance, but I did think it was worthy of being on the report so that the community could be abreast of that. And also, it gave me an opportunity to kind of raise it with DPH, because I'm not sure why that would be, why those referrals would be stalled for from a non, HIV service provider. So there's that. And let's see. I was going to raise it. We've kind of already talked quite a bit about it, but I did want to share, 2025-17. This is a client who struggles with a traumatic brain injury, and I didn't know this, but it's the client informed me that there are therapists that are specifically trained to work with and help, with rehabilitation tactics for folks living with a TBI. And I think most people know TBIs have traditionally posed a lot of problems for providers, because they have kind of elements of both a physical disability and a mental health disability, and they oftentimes don't fit clearly in one box or the other. And so clients oftentimes wind up getting passed back and forth. So he was really excited to hear about an opportunity to speak with a provider that specialized in that, and obtained a referral in theory, but it has not been effectuated. So I've been trying to reach out to the service provider. They are currently not available. I have referred to an alternative service provider, but in the interim, I've kind of lost contact with the client. So I'm still trying to get back in contact. I will keep you posted on that. But I think that kind of wraps up the meat of the report this month.
Thank you, Stephen.
Of course. Beth.
And maybe we could talk more about this offline, but I have a feeling that the Kaiser referral issue has a lot to do with private insurance, because they must have Kaiser insurance, and so they probably need to go through the Kaiser SNF as a first resort. So Kaiser probably has like a stable of SNFs that they can refer to, and this may not be one of them. And then the one may not accept referrals from, so they may not send a referral, and also they may not accept them because they know they have other options that are privately funded or insurance funded.
Okay.
So it may be a backup option, but I doubt it's a frontline option.
Got it. Okay. And so, well, I guess I'd have to talk. I see I don't have a client to like d actually do the analysis, which makes it difficult to have a real discussion. But that's good to know. And if I do get in contact with the client, I may be reaching out to try and diagnose, something. Thank you. So the so well, we can talk about it offline.
All right. Thank you so much, Stephen, for that report. And thank you, Beth, for that input. All right, moving along. If nobody has anything else for Stephen, will be the needs assessment slash COLA update.
Can I add one thing for
Oh, yeah.
Stephen? Just a huge thank you. I think he made a proposal for a presentation to the Ryan White conference, which I hope we all put some luck behind, but he made a wonderful proposal and he would represent our San Francisco system so well in the work that this committee does along, I'm just so grateful to Stephen.
Thank you. I had the support of a lot of folks here. I was given the forum to kind of talk about the program at Happen. Mark gave me input. I had input from some of my colleagues, and the folks at DPH were really helpful in putting. I'd never done that before. So hopefully it gets, accepted. It'll be fun to go and talk about what we do here.
All right, moving right along. My update for this portion is very short. As far as the COLA, we did advertise a COLA focus group for December, and that was for the target of cisgendered women living with or at risk for HIV. Unfortunately, we didn't receive interest for that specific focus group, so we are attempting to re-advertise for a new date in January. And so we'll be outreaching for that today and tomorrow. I'll be sending out those flyers. And it is a monolingual group that we are reaching out to, or monolingual speaking clients. So it is, I will reach out to you, Stephen, separately about that to see if maybe we can get some information. And then as far as the second COLA target, we will then, as well as for the needs assessment target for this year, we will actually start outreaching and putting together some of our materials for that. So moving forward from that, next month I will probably come back and ask for some ideas for outreach. Any questions or anything for that portion? All right. In that case, that is brought us to the end of our meeting. And so our next meeting will be February 4th. And we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Thank you all.
Thanks. Feel better, TJ.
Bye, everyone.